You're listening to Murdochian Tales, a short story collection by J.R. Murdoch. For more information, please visit ofgnomesanddwarves.com or jrmurdoch.com. The Cloak and the Dagger, Part 1. Jess stood atop the tree-covered hill as the last remnants of light disappeared. It was an effort to reach its crest through the heavy undergrowth. He had thought he would be safe from the rain amongst the tree's protective canopy, but he was sadly mistaken, and quite drenched despite his effort. His only protection from the elements, apart from his shirt, breeches, and simple boots, was his father's thick wool cloak that he'd stolen as he fled the house. He was 15 now, and if he didn't want to, he didn't have to take orders, and he surely didn't need to ask permission before taking anything. He would almost prefer to be taking orders now, and be dry. But even though the cloak weighed nearly 100 pounds now, he was free. That was worth any price he was currently paying. The only other item he had stolen from the house, not including the sack of food he had hastily eaten, was a dagger his father had said belonged to his grandfather. Though it was an old blade, it was long and sturdy. Having it strapped to his side gave Jess some hope that he could lay claim to some plot of land somewhere and start his own family. He wouldn't have to suffer from anyone else's orders for the rest of his life. The rain was relentless, and Jess's blonde locks hung about his face. He finally succumbed to his weary legs and empty stomach to sit against a tree. He would sleep in the rain tonight. As he slumped forward, he pulled the cloak over his head and protected himself from the continuous downpour. The following day was, if possible, worse, as Jess continued plodding through the dense woods he had led himself into. Many times he slipped on the leaf-covered ground or stumbled over a dead, rotting tree. He found no food, and was unsure of where in the area he could protectively forage for anything. He hoped that chance would bring him a berry bush or anything to satisfy the burning feeling in the pit of his stomach. He couldn't recall when he'd been so hungry, and wanted the sensation to go away. Water was in abundance, and he discovered that as long as he kept drinking it, his stomach didn't feel so bad. But that was no compensation for the empty feeling he felt. It nagged at him, and demanded that he do something. He stupidly gnawed on some birch bark, and later tried to chew some pine needles. Both made him gag and vomit the water that was inside of him. This made him feel more drained, but Jess was stubborn, and persisted to go forward, away from home. When the burning pangs turned to cramps was when Jess knew it was time to take drastic action. He started scanning the trees. Being early fall, the leaves had already turned and were already falling from the trees. About for a telltale clump of twigs and branches. He knew what a squirrel's nest looked like, and he was determined to find some meat. He spotted a nest that he felt wasn't too far out of reach. He removed the dagger from its scabbard and placed it in his teeth. Grabbing the lowest branch, Jess pulled himself up into the tree and began his ascent, quietly, so as not to disturb the resident that would soon be his meal. The nest was much larger than it looked from the ground. Jess found his way up the tree and worked his way along its side. It was about the size of a grown man's chest, about twice the size of Jess's. He slowly removed the dagger from his mouth and listened to the nest for a moment. He could hear movement inside. That meant meat. In one movement, he ripped off the top of the nest and poked his dagger around inside. To his surprise, the nest looked empty. The reason for this was its occupant was scurrying up Jess's arm. He flailed his arm about for a moment and then remembered the dagger. The squirrel was hanging on tightly, but when Jess slashed the dagger at the animal, it leapt into the branches. The blade of the dagger didn't stop and continued into Jess's arm. He screamed in pain and released his grip on the dagger. He watched as it banged off the branches and finally came to rest after splashing in a puddle. He cursed his dumb luck. Jess not only struggled to stay in the tree, but also wrestled with his poor memory. He knew there had to be a good reason for a squirrel to stay put in its nest. Was this something his father had taught him? Or something he was now learning for himself. He looked from the cut on his arm to the inside of the nest several times before it dawned on him. Nuts. Squirrels stored nuts for the winter. There had to be something inside this nest. There just had to. He knew this. At first he rummaged inside the nest with both hands. When he started to fall, he grabbed onto a branch, regaining his balance, and then started to rummage about with one hand. He finally had some luck, his first luck in 3 days since he'd left home. He found a small cache of nuts and pulled these out of the nest and placed them into the pockets of the cloak. Jess took his small bounty and descended. At the bottom of the tree, He was torn whether to eat the first or to dig the dagger out of the water. He chose to retrieve the dagger, as it would help him with cutting open the acorns. It took several tries before his shaky hands could easily open acorn after acorn. He even ate some pine nuts and could soon feel his strength returning. He hoped he'd never go that hungry again. 3 days later, and with no squirrel's nest in sight, Jess was that hungry again. He was quite far from home, and was certain that even if he'd wanted to, he'd die before he'd make it back. The rain had not let up, and he had acquired a nasty rattling cough. The damp cloak did little to keep him warm, yet he clung to it dearly. The only item that was holding up well was the oiled blade of the dagger. Despite being used to cut branches and dig in the ground, it was still quite sharp. Each night, in the fading sunlight, Jess would marvel at its silver surface. It had a blackened pattern etched in the base of the blade, just above the guard. He wasn't sure what this was for. The handle was wrapped in a fine golden chain. The end cap was a solid chunk of steel that balanced the blade perfectly. If Jess had known anything about weapons, he would have known what a fine blade he had, and perhaps had taken better care of it. As it was, the blade was being used for utility work. It was as if he was using a knight to plow a field. Before darkness overtook him again, he spotted an outcropping of rock. He hoped he might find some shelter from the rain that had pounded his head for so long. He slipped several times on the wet leaves that littered the ground, but managed to reach them. The rocks jutted out from a hillside at odd angles that at first didn't make any sense, but Jess could see that they disguised a low entrance to a cave by the angles that they formed. You needed to look at it just right to see the darkness beyond. He heaved a rough sigh of relief and commenced to a hacking cough. Despite the terrible pain, he still managed to get to the cave and flop down on all fours to crawl in. The relief that he felt from being out of the rain was instant. He shed his cloak, which fell to the cave floor with a heavy flop, and collapsed to the ground in much of the same manner. Jess wasn't sure how long it was before he awoke, but there was something tapping him on the head. Having spent so much time lost in the rainy woods, he was certain it was just rain, but the rain had never felt so hard. It also didn't have a voice.
"It cannot stay! It must go! Out, I say! Out with you! Get out of my cave! Out, 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 out!"
The high-pitched voice sounded funny, but whoever the voice was coming from was also beating upon Jess's head with a stick. Jess sat up abruptly, and then wished he hadn't. His head spun and felt horribly nauseous. He gagged several times, but nothing came. The action caused him to have a second coughing fit before he blacked out. Again, some time passed, and Jess realized he must have been delirious or dreaming. He opened his eyes, and he was still inside the damp cave. The rain outside had gotten worse, and only the lightning filled the skies outside. Jess sat up and wished he had a fire or something to keep him warm. Food would be great right now, but he knew that wasn't an option. Even though he knew there wasn't food for miles, his nose was telling his brain that there was food near, and it smelled hot and fresh. Drawing in a deep breath through his nose, Jess began to look about the cave. Along with the smell of food, he could make out the smell of burning wood. Fire. Fire meant that there would be warmth. He would be warm and dry and possibly even fed. He knew he had to find the source, and quickly. The cave was low, much lower than Jess remembered, but he was able to get onto all fours and crawl in deep. The ground took a gentle downward grade and turned several bends before Jess was able to see the light ahead of him. Each hand or knee that went forward brought him closer to the life-saving warmth. The smell of food made the pain in his stomach double and redouble as he thought about eating. Anything sounded good now. He would never complain about what he ate again. Just as long as he could eat, he would be grateful. Much deeper in, he passed a small room. He took a moment to poke his head inside and see small tools that were too tiny for his hands to use. There was a table and a chair and many small items that were made out of stone. Jess didn't let his curiosity get in the way of his hunger, and he pressed on. As he neared the last bend in the cave, the smell of food was overwhelming, but he also caught the scent of fetid meat and dung. He didn't care. The draw of the food was too strong, and he pressed forward around the bend. The fire he saw was small, but warmed him like a bonfire. A short stack of wood was piled against one wall. A stone pot was surrounded by the fire, and standing aside the fire was a creature. Jess had never seen anything like it, and was at first repulsed by its dirty and naked appearance, but at the same time, curious about the skinny, half-sized man-creature. It had long, pointed ears that were nearly as long as its bald head was wide. It had large, wide eyes that narrowed as they focused on Jess, crawling out of the darkness.
It does not belong in here. It does not. It must be gone.
The creature spat at Jess as it reached and picked up its small walking stick. The tunnel had narrowed at the point where Jess had stopped crawling, and he had no way to turn around or avoid the blows that were assailed upon him. He did his best to hold his hand before his face, but he was so weak with hunger that he blocked only a few. After failing at a defense, he tried an offensive move and grabbed the stick from the man-creature.
No, no, no! Have mercy on poor Gummit! He has nothing he could want! Don't hurt us! Please don't hurt us! And please don't kill us! It must not kill us! Gummit will try not to hurt it anymore!
I'm not an it. I'm a man. My name is Jess, he said weakly and coughed. I only want to get warm and dry and perhaps get something to eat. I've been in the rain for days.
A man, it says. It is a man. A man does not belong here with Gummit. I have nothing to offer a man. You must leave here. You must go to where there are other men. You must go and you will go now. Leave!
I will not go until I've gotten warm.
You must go now. You must. Gummit will get into trouble if a man is here.
Jess thought for a moment, but what Gummit was saying didn't make any sense. All Jess knew was there was warmth here and something that smelled like food. If you feed me, I will go.
Feed you? You are much too big for someone as small as me to feed. Gummit cannot make so much food. I have little. How can I feed you? I don't even know what a man eats.
I'll eat whatever you're cooking. It smells delicious. Gummit leaned away from Jess and narrowed his eyes as if he were sizing up the boy. An evil smile crossed his dirty face, and he turned and got the wooden spoon in a stone bowl and served a helping from the pot.
If it wants to eat with Gummit...
Gummit held the stone bowl up for Jess. Jess held the bowl under his nose and inhaled deeply. The food smelled so good he forgot his manners and buried his face into the food. It smelled good, but it was bitter tasting. He didn't care. It was food, and it was warm. He didn't stop eating, even though he could hear Gummit laughing.
The man is hungry. It eats well. Yes, very well. Perhaps it would like some wine, no?
You've got wine? Jess mumbled with a mouthful of food.
Oh, yes, we've got wine. Come, drink a glass with Gummit.
What's this I'm eating anyway? Jess asked and took another mouthful.
It's a special treat,
Gummit said from near the back of the cave. Jess could see where Gummit was standing, and he saw three or four rabbits on the ground. He'd eaten rabbit before and knew this didn't taste like rabbit. He noticed that the bodies of the animals were writhing as if they were alive somehow, but their emaciated bodies told him they were quite dead. Jess pulled the bowl away from his mouth slowly. Special in what way?
I made a special mushroom maggot mash.
The evil grin returned to Gummit's face. Jess stared dumbly into the empty bowl and felt himself starting to gag. He resisted the urge to vomit as he wanted to keep the food in his stomach. He knew he could live off of what he'd eaten. He would just never choose to eat it unless he was as desperate as he was. He set the bowl on the floor near the fire. It now made sense to why the rabbits' bodies were moving. They must have been filled with maggots. Gummit laughed and came back around the fire carefully, carrying a stone goblet filled with a black liquid.
Here is some wine. You can drink it. It does not smell good, but it will be good. It is good for humans to drink it. You must drink it all down quickly. Come now, drink. Gummit will not hurt the human.
Jess felt a little nervous by the now friendly way Gummit was acting, but still lifted the glass to his lips. Before he took a sip, he saw the excited look on Gommet's face. The little creature looked almost eager as it happily clapped his hands as Jess started to sip the nasty-smelling fluid. Before Jess swallowed the first bit, he felt something snake around his leg. This startled him and he dropped the goblet.
No! Gummit screamed. It did not drink! It did not drink! It must drink! It must! It must! It must!
Something has my leg! Jess screamed as it constricted tighter and began to pull him backward.
It hurts! It's pulling me! No!
Gummit's tone was greatly subdued.
Master, I am sorry, Master. I did not go looking for it. It came looking for me. I am sorry, Master. I am sorry, Master.
Gummit's voice trailed off as Jess was violently dragged backwards out of the tunnel. He hit the wall several times and bled from several minor cuts before he came to the entrance. Before he left the cave, he had the presence of mind to lash out and grab his father's cloak and dagger. Outside it was still raining, but it was much lighter now. Despite the decrease in rain, it was still bitterly cold. Now that Jess had been allowed some time to warm himself, the cold felt worse than it had been when he was sleeping in it. He instantly began to shiver. The only thing that brought him any relief was the thing that had gripped his leg had released itself once it was clear of the cave. Jess lay on the ground coughing for a long time. He didn't care what had grabbed him. He felt like a babe being taken from the warmth of the womb and being thrust into the cold, waiting world. He didn't want to look up from the wet leaves his face was pressing into. If death awaited him, he didn't want to see it. "Get up," a firm, rough, feminine voice commanded. Jess froze for a moment, then decided it was best to obey. He got up on all fours and found it very difficult to stand. His legs were wobbly and weak, his body exhausted. He had never felt so much pain in his life. All he wanted was a soft bed to lie on and a warm, dry blanket. With his head down, he turned to where the voice had come from. "Look at me, boy," the voice commanded, stronger this time. Jess looked up. From the ground view, he could tell the woman was wearing long brown robes. In her hand, she held a staff made of rough-cut stone. Further up, she had tied her robe at her narrow waist with a belt comprised of stone ringlets. Each was carved smooth and interlinked with each other, as if the entire chain was carved from a single block of stone. At the top, her face was youthful, but wise. Her green eyes were bright and full of life on her thin, pale face. Something Jess was sure that he lacked at the moment as he coughed. "Follow me, boy," she said stiffly. She turned, and Jess, who was donning his cloak, heard a scrabbling noise from behind him. It was the creature from the cave.
"Master! Master! It came to me! I tried to make it leave, but it came to me! I could not make it leave! Please, master, don't punish Gomet! Please spare my life! I meant it no harm, and I did try to make it leave! I did! It was blocking my entrance, so I could not go out to do my work!"
Gomet groveled at the woman's feet. "I will not punish you this time, Gomet, but I expect you to be at work tomorrow. Do you understand me?"
"Yes, master. Gomet will come right away. He will leave the human and come right away. Gomet is sorry, so sorry. Thank you for my life. Thank you, thank you."
Gomet was still thanking the woman as she left. Jess had to recollect his senses and follow her. She was tall, nearly 2 feet taller than Jess, and took long strides. Jess, tucking the dagger into his waistband, found it difficult to keep his legs moving to keep up with her. He did notice that her feet made no noise as she walked. Though her robe brushed the leaves on the ground, they were undisturbed by her feet. It took him a moment to fully realize that she was also dry. The rain wasn't touching her. Suddenly Jess felt as frightened of this woman as Gomet must have been. The food in his stomach had done wonders to help his strength as his walk continued. Jess dared not break the silence to let the woman know this. The woods had thinned noticeably, and it was then that Jess could see the edges of a swollen lake, its level obviously much higher than it should be. Off in the distance, he could make out a tuft of smoke. Below it was a stone house, the first house he'd seen since he'd left his own. He was thankful that tonight he might get a chance to be dry and sleep in a real bed. As they continued, Jess tried to take note of where they were. He wasn't sure if it would do him any good, but he tried to keep track of everything as the trees gave way to the clearing before the house. The moon stopped at the very edge of the clearing. As if on command, the rain stopped too. The clouds were dark and obviously filled with more rain, but for the time they had let up. She turned and looked down at Jess.
"How old are you, boy?"
Jess coughed before he answered.
"I'm 15.
The woman thought for a moment. Her eyes narrowed and she pursed her lips.
"You are too young. We shall have to do something about that. Follow me to my house."
Jess did as he was told. Walking through the fields, he saw dozens of little creatures like Gomet. They all gave quick glances up at the woman as she strode through the field, but never stopped the work they were doing, putting rocks of all sizes into baskets. Their actions made Jess feel nervous, like he should also be working and not simply walking by. The stone house was superbly made. The stones all fit together with incredible precision and gave the outside a smooth exterior. Even the roof was made of stone. The entire structure looked quite sturdy. A thin stone door opened inward as she approached the house, and she entered. Jess felt a moment of trepidation, but finally followed her inside. The house was warm, and Jess was instantly relieved to be out of the wild. He felt like a little boy going to the market for the first time. The house was filled with organized clutter. All manner of colored glasses and jars lined the shelves that extended from the wooden floor to the high ceiling. In spots where there were no jars, there were instead scrolls and books. No space on any wall was empty, quite unlike his home. There were also no other rooms. The house was one large room. To one side were a wardrobe, constructed of stone, and a bed. On the other side of the house was a large cauldron sitting over a fire. Above it, and ascending into the ceiling, was a large flue. There were also a few chairs and a small table next to them, but Jess noticed that there was a lack of anything that looked like a cupboard for food or a dining table.
"Take off your clothes," the woman commanded.
Jess realized that she wasn't very polite.
"Spleef, fetch this boy a robe."
A creature that looked much like Gommet appeared from somewhere. It may have been hiding behind a chair. Jess wasn't sure. It scurried over to the wardrobe and quickly grabbed a robe. It returned and placed it over the chair next to Jess and began picking up his wet clothes and wrapping them all in the cloak. Jess was a little embarrassed to be taking off his clothes in front of a woman, but her cold gaze never deviated from his face. The robe was so warm when he put it on that Jess instantly forgot himself and sat down in the chair.
"Get up," the woman snapped. "I have not said you can use my furniture."
Jess, as quickly as his sore body would allow, stood. The woman's face now bore a frown that caused Jess to look at the floor. He suddenly felt like a whipped child. This was exactly the feeling he was trying to run away from when he left home. Suddenly his father's scoldings didn't seem so bad. At least he didn't get yelled at for sitting on the furniture.
"Go lie on the floor next to the cauldron," the woman ordered.
Jess walked over and laid next to it as he was told. He had no idea what the woman was about to do, and felt a tinge of fright creep up his spine.
"What's your name?"
"Mine's Jess," he blurted, trying to overcome his fear by talking. He thought that if he knew her name, it would make things better. He also thought if she knew his name, maybe she wouldn't hurt him, though he couldn't be sure of her intentions. The woman stopped and looked down at him with disgust, as if he could not have offended her deeper.
"Just lie on the floor. Don't talk."
Jess did as he was told. He tried to think of what she could want with him. She was obviously not interested in him past her own needs, whatever those might be. He tried to look around to see what she was doing.
"Spleef, get the jar. Not that one, the other jar. You know which one. Just get it."
"Yes, master, yes, yes, right away. The one with the rocks of many colors. I know which one. I will get it."
"Have you eaten, boy?" the woman said as she stood over Jess.
A little," he answered.
She reached into a jar and drew out a red and green colored lump of something.
"Eat this, and then open your robe so I can see your chest."
The lump tasted like dirt and made his mouth tingle. Instantly his stomach felt full, and his body wasn't sore anymore. He felt a moment of relief and a moment of terror. The woman must be a sorceress. What could she possibly want with him?
"I told you to open your robe so I can see your chest," she said acidly. "Can't you even follow simple instructions?"
As Jess opened his robe, he asked,
"What do you want with me?"
The sorceress snorted in disgust and spun away from his view. When she returned, Spleef, Jess assumed that was the name of this creature following the sorceress, stood nervously by holding a jar filled with several large stones that danced with color, each filled with bright reds, greens, blues, and yellows. They didn't have a definite color but shifted from color to color so rapidly as to give the stones a hypnotic appearance. The sorceress snatched the jar from the creature and unceremoniously dumped the contents into the cauldron.
"Fetch a towel to clean up any blood," the sorceress snapped.
Spleef scampered off and returned quickly with a towel.
"What's that for?"
Jess asked nervously.
"Just lie still. I don't have time to answer your questions." "If there's any blood to come out of my body, I think I have a right to know about it,"
Jess defended himself and sat up slightly. He had never stood up to anyone before, and with the warm feeling he now had in his body, it felt really good. The sorceress put a foot on Jess's exposed chest and forced him back to the floor.
"Don't move."
She placed her hand into the boiling cauldron and removed one of the stones. The shifting colors had now coalesced into a pure white. She muttered a few words that Jess couldn't understand and dropped the stone onto Jess's bare chest. It hurt and burned.
"Yah!"
he screamed,
but he found he was unable to move his arms. "Stop struggling. It'll only make this take longer."
Jess didn't stop struggling even after she dropped the second stone onto his chest. Again it burned. He looked at the first as it was sinking into his skin. Even beyond his skin, it was sinking into his chest. He could feel it working through his ribs. The searing pain was intense, and he felt his eyes begin to water. He wasn't sure if he was crying or not, for his screams combined with the pain dulled all his senses. After an eternity of pain, it was finally over. Jess had a hard time regaining his breath and when he was sure he finally did, the world faded into darkness. Thank you for listening to Murdochian Tales, a short story collection by J.R. Murdoch. For more information and contact information, please visit ofgnomesanddwarves.com or jrmurdoch.com. Until next time, keep the shiny side up.